in all other states of the Union, upon the granting of statehood, the states took a small portion of land for the public, and Native nations and Native peoples were given their own lands from the federal government, which at that time were called federal reservation lands. That never occurred in Hawaii. We don't have any Hawaiian reservations in Hawaii.
Is everybody on tape? Good. You're taping right now? All right.
From Seattle, the Earth on the Air Radio Works presents Earth on the Air.
That's how it is out here.
In the next half hour, join a Seattle school teacher on a trip to Hawaii. It's a great vacation spot, but David Fisher, who contributed the tape for this show, found Hawaii to be one of the hottest human rights battlegrounds in the country.
Our people have gone through much suffering in the past couple centuries. It is very, very unfair to the Hawaiian people and the Hawaiian nation, and enough is enough.
Our purpose here is to defend the Creator's creation. The state is not working in the interest of life.
It's not just what people want to label as, you know, radical Hawaiians. It's something that's coming from the Na'au, to look for righteousness within ourselves and within our people.
You as a Hawaiian should be ashamed of what is happening today. This is not aloha.
My name is David Fisher. I'm a Seattle middle school teacher. I was born in Hawaii, and recently I returned on sort of a vision quest. And what I saw there was a very beautiful land, people, and culture being destroyed. So I'm trying to do what I can to document this and get the word out. When I arrived in Hawaii, I read in the media about a group of activists who had been arrested at Iolani Palace on King Kamehameha Day. These were the grassroots leaders of the Hawaiian sovereignty movement, people I would be spending some time with in the next few weeks. People like Dennis Bumpy Kanahele, who helped organize this event. Bumpy said it started out great as a peaceful celebration. They even managed to secure an official permit.
Then we got up and it started to, you know, just hit me like, hey, this is too good to be true. And here comes Cappy and Roger Long saying, Bumpy, we f***ed up. This was the exact words. And I said, no, what happened? He said, well, they're going to pull it. And I said, why? We signed. We had an agreement. Everything is. So he said, well, you know, I don't know what to say to you, Bumpy. But I said, oh, man, you guys tell us have everything in writing. We got things in writing. You know, we were supposed to have this overnight thing. I'm pissed off inside. It's very peaceful, and now this is going to happen. It can't be. Then Cappy said, well, what's going to happen now when we got back outside to the gazebo? Then I said, Cappy, and it came about like 4:45. He said, you guys going to stay? I said, yeah, bro, we got to stay. I mean, we're not wrong.
They were taken out by special forces. For 35 Hawaiians, they brought down 120 riot-armed ground troops. That doesn't count the people that were in the helicopter surfacing with a door open and a submachine gun pointing down at the palace.
That's Hawaiian Native Rights Attorney Mililani Trask.
When you look at the arrests, you'll find that seven of the 32 arrested, seven of them were Kalahui members. We had a university professor who was a quadriplegic in a wheelchair, arrested for assaulting the palace. He couldn't even get his wheelchair up the stairs. But when the police came, they asked him what he was doing there. And his response to them was that if he had legs, he would walk up the stairs. So they arrested him. Because if he did have legs, he would have been up the stairs.
When you come into Hawaii, it is an incredible sight. You've got these these dome shield volcanoes that rise conically up from the sea. They're black basalt, etched with orange iron, and they knuckle into the sea, which washes the shores, and curtains of rain are carried by clouds across the islands. It rains every day, but it's a warm rain, and it doesn't rain in the same place. It rains all over, so it'll pass you at least one time during a 24-hour period. You'll be rained on.
Down on the road,
down on the road, the mountains so old, far on the countryside.
What is really evident in Hawaii, of course, is the music is one of the first things you'll be drawn to, besides the visual splendor of Hawaii itself, but the music of the Hawaiians. And it is a beautiful, soft music. There's no other music like it in the world. And if you listen a little closer to some of this music, you will start to hear some of the words. The beaches they sell to build their hotels, your fathers and I once knew.
Like the beaches they sell to build their hotels, my fathers and I once knew. Like birds all along, the sunlight has dawned, singing why Manalo blue. Wind's gonna blow, so I'm gonna go down on the road.
If you really want to see what's happening there, then you go to the other parts of Kauai and you see Hawaiians in cars camped on the beach. If you go to the island of Maui, you see them on the roads, you'll see the young kids selling leis. They're living simply. They're catching their fish in the sea. They have their taro patches where they live, and they grow their vegetables. And they don't really need a lot to live. It's a very simple existence. If you go to the big island of Hawaii, you're not really going to see them hanging out in the tourist places. You're going to see them on the beaches, up in the countrysides, in the sugarcane towns, where the people, you know, they're working in the sugarcane fields. And you see these incredible hotels that are just, I mean, the expense, these cost $200-$300 a night, just minimum. You can get on up to thousands of dollars. It's Hawaiians work in those hotels. And they work for the military in small jobs and so forth in the bases. Then they go home to where they live, and then they have to somehow survive. And they're forced to sort of live these two lives. Their Hawaiian natural life, and then the one where they have to work for the Western society in the tourist or the military trade, which is controlling their islands. When you get into it a little deeper, then you realize that not all of these Hawaiians are just going to work, working in the tourist trade, going to the local military berth, working, and then going home and keeping quiet. Some of them have said no. They're meeting at prayer vigils, at demonstrations, gathering to form their legal organizations with the intent of getting their land back.
Oh, my name is Mike Grace, and I'm just exercising my native rights. We'll be taking back my land.
Sandra Field Grace. We've been married 8 years, and we've been occupying lands at Anahola for 6 years now. We're part of the movement to reconstitute the nation of Hawaii.
Whatever they do, I still say I own the land, and I'm going to stay here and use it like I own it. Yeah.
I was able to hook up with Michael and Sandra Grace, who were a couple of the leading people in the movement on Kauai, who had just recently been bulldozed from their home over at Anahola.
Now with today's local news, here's Molly Dawson.
Thanks for joining us. The State Department of Hawaiian Homelands followed through with their threats of eviction, and 14 people were arrested early Monday morning at Anahola Beach Park. All 14 residents were charged with trespassing. The Kauai Police, in cooperation with the National Guard, the State Department of Hawaiian Homelands, and the State Attorney General's Office, moved into the area and closed off the roads going into the park. Michael and Sandra Grace were leaders in the residents' fight for Hawaiian rights and have lived at the park for 5 years. The Graces were arrested and booked, along with 9 others at the Graces' house, which has been a community gathering place for some time. Following the arrest, the National Guard moved in, and the demolition began at about 10 a.m. Monday.
They're bulldozing our house and our garden. I mean, they bulldozed the food, you know, that we were growing. So the general public was furious. And then we proceeded to, you know, be suing them as individuals, the governor, the attorney general, and the head of Hawaiian Homes. So those are still in the courts. So since we rebuilt a month after, and now we've been back on the land a year.
This is typical of what the Hawaiian sovereigns are doing. They're simply going in, moving onto the land, camping out, building on the land, and taking what is theirs on Hawaiian homelands. And the state, in turn, is coming in and bulldozing them off their property. And this is happening on all of the islands. And in general, this is the trenches, so to speak, the marginal line. This is where the battle is being fought. And, of course, then that's going into the courts.
I'm Mililani Trask. I'm the Kia Aina of Kalahui, Hawaii. I'm a native Hawaiian attorney, and I have been a Hawaiian activist for issues relating to civil rights and environmental justice in Hawaii for about 15 years. Kalahui, Hawaii is the Hawaiian sovereign nation. What Kalahui, Hawaii is it's a native initiative for sovereignty and self-determination. We have currently enrolled about 12,000 native citizens. And what we are seeking is, number one, the segregation of the native trust lands away from public holdings. Number two, recognition, federal and state recognition of our sovereign government, which consists of about 183 elected officials from all of the islands, including Niihau. Number three, we want to have taxing power and tax exemption so that we can develop our own assets to further our national goal of economic self-sufficiency. And number four, we wish to be able to have jurisdiction over our land so that we can preserve the integrity of our land base in manners which are culturally and traditionally appropriate.
In 1893, a group of American sugar interest people took over the government of Queen Liliuokalani, and this was considered by President Cleveland to be an illegal use of American forces. They were called in to stand guard while these American businessmen threw the queen out of the palace. Cleveland did not recognize this. His Secretary of State did not recognize this. They commissioned a report and found out that the United States had acted in a coercive manner and it was illegal. And then President McKinley came into power after Cleveland, and Hawaii was quietly annexed to the United States.
In the traditional structure of land holdings, the concept of private property was unknown. The islands were divided into ahupua'a, or pie-shaped divisions, with the ali'is, or the ruling chiefs, having the responsibility to monitor and make decisions with regard to land use. But even the ali'is themselves and the priests, or the kahunas, did not own land. Land was viewed as being something that belonged to the gods, and there was a certain strata in our traditional society that managed the land for the benefit of the people. With the impact of Western law, the incursion of Western legal principles, what occurred was that private property ownership became the primary political issue for sugar planters and missionaries who came here and rapidly became the business interests dominating the kingdom. They wanted to own land in fee simple. So what you see over a period of about one generation with the impact of Western law is that the traditional and cultural common ownership of land is dispelled, and the lands, all of them, passing into the hands of either the government or foreign and American businesses. That was accomplished within one generation.
In 1920, a United States Act, the Hawaiian Homelands Act, was passed, which was supposed to place Hawaiians on Hawaiian land. And, of course, this never really happened.
The real purpose for passing that act was to prevent native homesteaders from obtaining valuable lands for agriculture or pastoral uses. the lands that were provided were the barren, arid, rural lands. And that is why today we have a very long waiting list, 22,000 families waiting for lands. Some families have been on the list for as long as 30 and 40 years. The lands have not been developed for homesteading because, generally speaking, they're not suitable for homesteading. In 1959, when we became a state, the federal government transferred this to the state of Hawaii 4 million acres of land to be held in trust for the public and for the betterment of conditions of Native Hawaiians. In all other states of the Union, upon the granting of statehood, the states took a small portion of land for the public, and Native nations and Native peoples were given their own lands from the federal government, which at that time were called federal reservation lands. That never occurred in Hawaii. We don't have any Hawaiian reservations in Hawaii.
The 1.4 million acres of ceded trust land is used as the state sees fit. It's not given to Native Hawaiians. Instead, it's given or leased to counties and state agencies, public schools, flood control projects, and quite a bit goes to the U.S. military. The Hawaiian Islands are key strategically to the U.S. Defense Department. They've been used for developing new weapons, such as the Star Wars technology. They've even been used for bombing practice.
Beneath the skies of paradise, a beautiful island weeps and cries, torn and battered by winds and plagues. Ko'olawe, I feel your pain. Ko'olawe, I feel your pain, Ko'olawe. I feel your pain.
Ko'olawe, I feel your pain. This again is the pain of the nation. You know, the subjugation of the nation, the genocide upon the nation, the desecration to the lands, the bombing, the military bombing of the island of Ko'olawe. You know, what they did in Iraq and Iran, they practiced on the island of Ko'olawe.
Liko Martin is a musician and activist who is lobbying in Washington, D.C., as well as recording the movement in song.
Initially, prior to the atomic bomb, they did an experiment on Ko'olawe where they put 100,000 tons of TNT. And all the allies, the Canadians, all came in their ships and then they detonated it. Well, there's pictures of this, and it looks like an atomic bomb mushroom going off. You fly over the island on the big island side, you'll see this big hole in the island. Okay. That's what the Ko'olawe, I feel your pain, is all about.
Ko'olawe Island is one of the longest struggles that we have carried in this state. What we wanted to do 20 years ago was to stop the military bombing of that island and to provide that land would be transferred to a Native nation for our protection. It's an area that is very wealthy in historic properties. We did manage to have the entire island put on the National Register of Historic Properties. And also it's an island that has great significance for us. The name of it refers to the child that is born of Kanaloa, for the next generation. But for Native people, it has become a symbol for our continuing struggle to regain our lands, to stop desecration of our lands by the military and others, and to bring these lands into the protection of the Native people.
Someday maybe you go back to the days of old, when you were beautiful in green and gold. I've hung my head in prayers and cried out your name. Ko'olawe, feel your pain.
On Oahu, In the Halava Valley, Native Hawaiians have been camped out for months on sacred sites, trying to protect them from the infamous boondoggle known as the H3 Military Freeway, now under construction.
The H3 Freeway is a very small freeway. It would hook up Mokapu Military Air Base with Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard. The cost to American taxpayers has been phenomenal. Halava and H3 Freeway is the most costly freeway in the history of the United States of America. It costs $100 million per mile. All of that money, about 95% of it, has come from the federal government, and it's paid out to the construction industry. It is considered the political plum by which Senator Inouye has paid off campaign debts and reaped a very large war chest for his own election. He got blanket exemptions for all of the national environmental protection laws. They do not apply with regards to this freeway. In addition, Senator Inouye has turned his back on the issue of sacred site protection. Several major heiaus and sacred sites have been destroyed on the windward side already due to construction, and now as the freeway comes through the leeward side of Oahu Island, it will destroy the last major sacred historic property that is left on that side of the island.
My name is Alapaguyu. There were five of us that came into the valley to occupy the site because it was important. It is considered our heiau, which is also a temple that our culture worship. And it is a religious site also for purposes of healing, making things right, which is Ho'oponopono. We're trying to save the sites because of H3 going through here. They're ruining everything that is so significant to our culture. This valley is so significant. It has a lot of nature. It's the culture-wise environment, you know. We need to save this for our future generations.
How long have you been up here?
I have been here from April 5th. And I have never left.
April, May, June. July.
I've been here about 4 months.
4 months.
Yeah.
You know, the basic problem in Hawaii is one of negligence and politics. The state has always viewed the native population as being a thorn in its side. The federal government's position is that the Hawaiian people and their trust lands and assets were given in a status of perpetual wardship to the state. And for that reason, we are wards of the state rather than being viewed as Native Americans with the right to be sovereign as the other 515 federally recognized Indian and Alaska nations are. The problem has been further complicated because Native Hawaiians are the only class of Native Americans which are not allowed access into the federal district court to bring suit to protect their trust assets. So we are virtually powerless when it comes to accessing avenues for redress within the American system.
The movement, for the most part, is a grassroots one. Hawaiians are mobilizing against everything from the development of golf courses to geothermal wells. When Bumpy Kanahele and several Hawaiians returned from Vietnam, they slept on the beaches until they decided to occupy an abandoned government lighthouse at Makapu'u on Oahu, which they claimed as their ancestral home. They cleaned the place up and settled in with several families.
We started to raise some food, some pigs, chickens. It was the beginning of political renaissance for the grassroots movement, Hawaiian movement. Basically, that's what it was.
What occurred there was a travesty. The state brought in heavily armed helicopters. They issued submachine guns, and they went up there and they arrested those people and brought them down by gunpoint.
They pounded a lot of our kids, even our women, slammed them to the ground. They had no mercy. There was a standoff. Eventually, I got blamed for waving a shotgun at one of the SWAT officers. We got railroaded in court too. Here we're fighting a land issue in court, not even thinking about this criminal issue. And when the verdict came down, we didn't even back ourselves up in a criminal sense. And because I had our prior records, I got put in prison for about a year. It was like I was the first political prisoner that I know of that had spent time fighting for the movement.
All of IE stand together. It is now and forever. Raise your voices, hold your banners high. For we shall stand as the nation, guide the destiny of our generations. Sing and praise the glories of our land.
This is not a movement of French Hawaiians. Ka Lahui Hawaii has put together a constitution, and if they were given some land, they could actually run that land. And the movement itself is maybe, at least in its modern form, is over 20 years old. It's as strong as the peace movement in Europe with the Green Movement. It's as strong as any peace movement in our environmental movement in the United States mainland proper.
We started out as 250 Native leaders who wrote a constitution. We went to all of the islands, and within 1 year there was an overwhelming response that Native people wanted to register as citizens. And here we are 5 years later with over 12,000, and our numbers growing exponentially. But as we have increased our numbers and now made public our plan for sovereignty and acquisition of our lands, we have met with increased resistance.
...1993 is the 100th anniversary of the illegal takeover of the Hawaiian government. The Hawaiian sovereignty movement is growing in leaps and bounds. Will the Hawaiians eventually be given the lands they were promised decades ago? Will they at least be given some degree of sovereignty? Or will the state continue to resist? That's the question. I think we can measure our own society and culture in terms of how we respond to this. Are we going to continue to beat the Hawaiians down? Or are we going to allow them to exist according to their own traditions?
If we just stick by the two fundamental laws, which is aloha and aloha aina, aloha is, I give you the breath of life. I mean, there's nothing calculating or selfish about it. So that's a basic philosophy. The other being aloha aina, which is living at one with the earth. The earth takes care of us. And we take care of the earth.
If you'd like information about this program, or if you'd like to find out about contributing your tape to Earth on the Air, write to us at P.O. Box 45883, Seattle, Washington 98145. The preceding tape about Kalahui, Hawaii, was contributed by Seattle middle school teacher David Fisher. He had help from Laulani Teal. The program was produced by Peter Mulloff and engineered by Eric Bowerman at Jackstraw Productions in Seattle. Music was from Liko Martin, lyrics by Thorwald and Lester Bailey. Partial funding was from the Mary Reynolds Babcock Foundation, the Dudley Foundation, and listener members like you. Special thanks to KUOW in Seattle and all the Earth on the Air volunteers and staff. If you'd like a cassette copy of this program, call 1-800-800-3145. Mention that you're interested in show number 31. For the Earth on the Air Radio Works, this is Janice Kane.